In November, my colleague Laurel Miller and I had the opportunity to visit Afghanistan. The result of that visit and a lot of additional research and interviewing was the paper on establishing the rule of law in Afghanistan, which you'll find at the door. This is in draft form today, but we expect that within a month or so it will be published and distributed by USIP. Laurel Miller, as you can see from her bio, is an extremely distinguished international lawyer. She has had a lot of experience in the practical business of peacemaking, having served on the U.S. delegation at Dayton, deputy leader of the U.S. delegation for Macedonia. And she comes to the United States Institute of Peace from her previous position, which was the deputy to the ambassador at large for war crimes at the Department of State. So nice to have you with us.
Thank you. As the remarks of the previous speakers have shown, the new constitution in Afghanistan is clearly a milestone in the state or nation-building process. But creating the legal framework for the detailed legal framework and the practical apparatus of law enforcement and administration of justice is clearly going to be essential in order to breathe life into the rights and protections that are guaranteed in the new Constitution. While the Constitution itself is obviously fundamental to establishing a system of government based on the rule of law, the process of reconstructing or constructing, in the first instance, the systems and the institutions that are necessary to effectuate the rule of law is a process that has not needed to wait for the new constitution in Afghanistan. It's a process that, in principle, has been underway since the Bonn Agreement was concluded 2 years ago. Looking at the progress in the last 2 years and the challenges in creating the nuts and bolts of a system of rule of law gives us some indication, I think, as to the prospects for implementing the new constitution and the prospects for establishing a genuine rule of law in Afghanistan more generally. As Bob indicated, he and I have been engaged in examining the efforts by Afghan authorities and international donors over the last couple of years to pursue reform and reconstruction in a number of areas, including police, courts, judges and lawyers, law reform, professional training and education, and the correction system. We've also been looking at some of the fundamental cross-cutting challenges to developing institutions as well as developing a culture of rule of law in Afghanistan, such as the growing narcotics trade and the impact of warlords. As Bob also indicated, we've put together something of a progress report on these efforts, including recommendations. And I will talk about some of our conclusions, and Bob will address some of the others in his remarks. By way of background, it's important to recognize that the rule of law has never been strong in Afghanistan. So there's a need not only for a reconstruction process, but in many areas there's a need also for creating institutions and procedures that have never been known. The challenges of doing this are, of course, hugely magnified by the fact of over two decades of warfare and the human capacity and physical infrastructure devastation that that has entailed. So it's important to bear in mind that the process that was set underway 2 years ago has started out from a very low level of resources and capacity. The long period of warfare also very deeply entrenched a culture of rule of the gun in Afghanistan, and this has been an obstacle in creating an effective judiciary and law enforcement as much as in the political process and the broader effort to establish security in Afghanistan. So recognizing these challenges and recognizing also the importance to Afghanistan's stability and future of developing the rule of law, an importance that is frequently noted by Afghan officials and international officials as well, it seems clear that a tremendous amount of effort is needed over a sustained period of time in order to address the needs. With some exceptions, which Bob will discuss, we found in our research that the necessary measures do not appear to be treated at the moment with a great deal of urgency. in the justice sector, the reform and reconstruction process has been slow and halting up until this point, and little measurable progress has been made. Despite the immense importance, as I noted, of a functioning justice system to protecting people's rights, to creating a basis for economic development and other areas of progress, the needs in the justice sector have not received a great deal of political attention. Some donors are working with Afghan institutions on some projects in this area, in particular some efforts towards law reform, some professional training programs, and a bit of infrastructure repair, but mostly in Kabul. But there is no overall strategy or consensus on the priorities at the moment. Some have felt that the government of Italy, which is the so-called lead nation among donors for the justice sector, should be working with the Afghan institutions to drive the development of a strategy and coordinate its implementation among donors, but as yet this has not occurred. Donor funding for the rule of law for projects in that area has been rather light so far. Using Afghan government figures for 2003, as of November, there was about $19 million in assistance dispersed for everything other than police. But even that number is a bit shaky, as about a fourth of that number was unallocated to any specific projects, and some of the allocated disbursements are a bit questionable. One area that has been almost entirely ignored is corrections system. Other than a few projects undertaken by non-governmental organizations, the only concrete work on prison and jail improvement underway is being conducted by the UN Office of Drugs and Crime with Italian funding, but that funding amounts to only $2 million over 2 years. Every account of the conditions of detention and prison facilities in Afghanistan indicates that there is a tremendous need in this area, from a lack of food and basic sanitation to an absence of trained personnel to a simple lack of space. That's not even to mention the important problem of the lack of central government control over most detention facilities in the country. So limited funding, a lack of political focus, and the absence of a strategy are some of the reasons why progress has been minimal in building the justice sector so far. Another key problem is the dysfunctional reform and reconstruction process. Part of that problem is that, unlike other areas of reconstruction in Afghanistan, there are several co-equal Afghan institutions with responsibilities in the justice sector. There's the Ministry of Justice, which has mostly administrative functions, the Supreme Court, which is responsible for the entire judiciary, as Dr. Rubin noted, and the Attorney General's Office, which is responsible for all the prosecutors in the country. These institutions have very fractious relations with each other for a variety of personal, political, and turf consciousness reasons. So leadership at a level above those institutions is clearly needed in order to try to overcome this destructive dynamic. Another aspect of the dysfunctional reform and reconstruction process is that the Judicial Reform Commission, which was created under the Bonn Agreement and which is supposed to facilitate among the permanent institutions and to coordinate the reform process, has not been able to perform its role effectively. The reasons for that include the relatively light political weight of the membership of the commission, management problems within the commission itself, and insufficient resources for it to carry out its mandate, bearing in mind that it's a body that had to be created from scratch. An important obstacle that also bears mentioning is one that Dr. Rubin alluded to, and that is the current Supreme Court. Some of the greatest needs in the justice sector are to improve the quality of judicial personnel, to update and improve the structure of the court system, and to improve court administration. None of the efforts that are necessary in any of those areas can be undertaken without a leading role by the Supreme Court. but the court is currently headed by a Chief Justice who does not appear to be a proponent of reform. He has appointed many judges who do not meet the education or experience requirements under current Afghan law. And many of those, for example, have madrasa education but no legal education, either secular or Islamic. The Chief Justice is widely seen as an obstacle to improving the judiciary. And I note, again, as alluded to by Dr. Rubin, that the new constitution continues to concentrate a great deal of power over the judiciary in the hands of the Supreme Court and the Chief Justice in particular. So as I think I've painted a somewhat dismal picture of the situation in the justice sector, the question arises, what can be done about all of this? One important step would be to invest heavily in developing the human resource capacity that is needed through a much greater focus on and funding for professional education and training. It's especially important to improve the quality of long-term training. For example, virtually nothing has been done so far to assist law faculties anywhere in the country, and they're really in a terrible state, both in terms of their infrastructure, the resources available to them, and trained and qualified faculty. There's a place also for short-term training. There are needs there as well, but the best hope for the future over the long term may be to begin now the process of building the next generation of legal professionals. Another step would be to professionalize the judicial and prosecutorial selection procedures, updating and actually applying and implementing established standards of qualification. This will require a high-level political commitment in light of the entrenchment in the system now of many who are not qualified. A judicial monitoring program would help as well, and the UN mission in Afghanistan is probably in the best position to initiate such a program. At the moment, there is no systematic observation of how the system functions in reality, no observation of individual cases. So simply getting accurate information that could be used as a basis for a reform strategy is a real challenge. Corruption in the system is another huge problem, and until salaries are improved, and I'm told the average salary for judges is about $36 a month, it won't be possible to make any headway on this front. Even some technically and politically easier steps need much greater attention than they've had so far. For example, most courts and prosecutors' offices lack even basic supplies, communication equipment, or access to legal materials. Often it can take days, weeks, or even months, depending on location, for communications to pass between central government offices and courts and prosecutors' offices in the provinces. But even in this relatively easy, though logistically challenging, area, little has been done so far. For the most immediate term, it's perhaps the most important task to reform the reform process itself in the justice sector. And this would entail either beginning now to wind down the Judicial Reform Commission and spin off its activities, or substantially enhancing its stature and its capacity. Either way, leadership at the presidential level, above the level of the Supreme Court, Ministry of Justice, and Attorney General's office, is going to be needed in order to energize the reform process. And at the same time, donors other than the lead nation in this area and in some of the others that we'll talk about, particularly the U.S. government, which has the most at stake and is already, of any other donors, investing the most resources, need to assert a stronger role both financially and politically in supporting this process. Now I'd like to turn it over to Bob, who will discuss some of the other areas that we looked at.